absolutely horrible to see. The President of the United States falling on stage at the U.S. Air Force Academy's graduation. No one wants to see this. I don't even like to show this, but I think it's important because it brings up the thing that nobody wants to talk about there in the Oval Office, and that would be age. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. I am Trish Regan. This is the Trish Regan Show. We're going to get to that video in just a moment. Again, not something you want to see, but something that at least has to be discussed in light of his age and in light of how old he would be if he were elected to a second term in office. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about Target. So there's a new song that became number one on Apple iTunes that recommends people boycott Target. And well, the fact that it's number one on iTunes, you can just imagine how badly they are freaking out over there at Target. I'll tell you, this company is in trouble. It's losing billions of dollars, $10 billion and counting at last check. Meanwhile, another company that's losing money still is Anheuser-Busch. $26 billion wiped out there in market cap since the whole Dylan Mulvaney thing. We're going to talk about the latest move, the mea culpa that Anheuser-Busch is trying to pull, and Jamie Dimon for president? Well, that's an interesting idea. This is the guy that runs JP Morgan. What do you guys think of that? I want to just quickly point out, portions of the program are brought to you by Legacy PM Investments, legacypminvestments.com. Go check it out. You can buy and sell gold and silver there at 1-866-589-0560. All right. Again, this is not something that we as Americans want to see. This is something that we should never actually have to see. But, you know, of course, we're living in a very modern media age where all of this information is readily available, the video, of course, being broadcast out to the world. And unfortunately, it shows our president, who's 80 years old now, and he's not exactly what I would call a young 80, falling on stage there after giving the commencement address at the U.S. Air Force Academy. Watch. It's tough. It's tough to see and not something that we want to see. And incredibly unfortunate. Incredibly unfortunate. I mean, look, we all get old. Hopefully, you know, you're not president of the United States when you're 80 years old because you are at risk of something like this. And for those that are just tuning in, by the way, I'm going to get to all your comments. I see this. It's good to see all of you here today. I know you feel bad. I mean, some people are laughing, but you don't want to laugh at something like this. I think you just need to see it and understand sort of where he is and the challenges, of course, that he faces. You hear the crowd there pretty silent. I think everybody was just stunned. Everybody was shocked. I want to report that the White House is just coming out right now. This is just breaking with a statement that the president is fine. He's doing fine. And of course, we're all relieved at that because look, when you get up there, when you're 80 years old and you fall, things can break. You lose your balance, you fall, and, you know, it's happened to the best of us. Heck, you know, I myself am thankfully not near that age range, but was out running around this time last year and actually fell, tripped and, you know, hurt my elbow pretty badly, actually. I wound up with a broken elbow as a result. Well, not really broken. I guess it was fractured because I didn't actually have to wear a cast, but it was no fun. This is what happens. And, you know, we can't just ignore how old the president is. There are younger options out there. So why aren't we thinking about that? Why aren't the political parties, frankly, thinking about that? I mean, you've got Ron DeSantis, of course, who's still coming under all kinds of heat from every which way, right? So Ron DeSantis is younger. He's got much more time in front of him. And then, you know, the other reaction you might have to that is just that, well, the president, the former president of the United States is almost as old as Joe Biden, but doesn't quite seem that old. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on there. And I think that the reality is it could happen to anyone, but the fact that he's 80, it shouldn't be happening to him. It shouldn't happen to the president, and no one wants to see it. No one. I mean, we're much relieved that he's okay. All right, turning to some of the other stories that we're looking at right now. Target freaking out. I mean, listen, would you really want a song about your company being boycotted to head to number one on the charts at Apple iTunes? Take a listen, a quick listen, because I can't play too much, but I want you to hear this or see part of it anyway. This is by a rapper who is very popular in the Donald Trump supporting community, and he came out with a rap song and a song that is about Target and how Target is trying to target your children, he says, and wow, it's quite popular. Yeah. All right. The idea is they put a target on my back. They put a target on your kids. That's sort of how the song goes. And it is just taken off. And I think that management must be like, oh my gosh. I mean, like, look, guys, let's face it. We're in for a big month, right? This is the LGBTQ and many other letters. I can't quite keep up. Community's big month. This is Pride Month. It is June 1st. So you can look forward to a whole lot more sort of genuflecting and praising the community. I think, you know, what we've seen is just a sampling of it, whether it be the Ford Raptor truck, whether it be the Bud Light Dylan Mulvaney thing, which, by the way, they were doing even before we got into Pride Month. And of course, you've got the giant display there at Target, which has gotten everybody so darn angry, understandably, given that it turns out one of the designers is somehow a Satan worshiper. Although he's no, that's misinformation. Misinformation. Give me a break. I've showed you this before, but we should just see it again because I'm just sick of people like this Eric Carnell saying, nope, just misinformation. Nothing to see here. These are the designs he had. Satan respects pronouns, T. And he went on to praise Satan. Satan loves you, loves who you are, blah, 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 in his sort of online store where he sold this kind of merchandise. Okay, so it's not misinformation to say that the guy kind of had a thing for Satan in some way, shape, or form, or at least thought he could make money off of him. I mean, this is what he was promoting in his spare time when he was not designing Pride rainbow, you know, onesies at Target. So people are like, you know what? I've had it. I don't need to shop at Target. Thank you very much. And by the way, this company, I should point out, which has lost about $10 billion in market cap. I should point out that this company has actually been struggling already, right? So it's not even the fact that this is coming. This is like on top of everything else it was dealing with. The CEO, Brian Cornell, admitted that they're losing upwards of $500 million a year on theft. On theft, because, you know, they can't do anything about shoplifters. There are organized crime rings that are major shoplifting rings that are coming into Target, and Target can't do anything, apparently. You know, so you just allow it, and you lose $500 million, possibly more, a year as a result of all that theft. On top of it, you know, 54% of their annual sales come from what they call discretionary items. And our economy has gotten increasingly challenged, shall we say, amid all this inflation. Thank you, Federal Reserve. Thank you, Joe Biden. Thank you, Congress, very much. So amid all of this inflation, we don't maybe spend as much money on some of those discretionary items anymore, those things that you don't really need because they're kind of too expensive. And so Target, as a result, has seen comparable sales come in flat. This is according to their latest earnings, which came out sort of mid-April. So this company has problems fundamentally. And then you layer in, You layer in this Eric Carnell and you layer in the Target song. I wish I could play more of it. I have to be, you know, we have to be respectful of the artist and making sure that the artist gets compensated. And so I encourage you to go over to Apple iTunes and check out the whole thing. You can listen to it there. And I think you'll get a kick out. He was frustrated. He thought he was getting blocked or shadow banned by algorithms. And he went on Fox News and did Fox and Friends and spoke to the anchor there about it. And actually, it wound up getting quite a bit of pickup. And now it's being shared virally among people. And so just this week, it hit number one on Apple iTunes. So yeah, you know, Target's got some problems. Target's got a lot of problems. And like I said, losing a ton of money, $10 billion. When you look over at Bud Light, you see even more trouble because Anheuser-Busch, which is the parent company, they've lost some $26 billion in market cap since the whole thing with Dylan Mulvaney started. It's amazing to see. And you get two Wall Street analysts that have come out and finally criticized the company. One of them over at HSBC downgrading the company to a hold. I mean, apparently nobody actually wants to say sell because then you totally sever your relationship with the CEO. But you know what hold means, right? Anyway, so Bud Light's like, what do we do now? What do we do now? Oh, let's just donate to an LGBT cause because maybe that will pick us up a little bit, you know, with that whole community. So they handed $200,000 to an LGBTQ community organization that is designed to help small business owners of the LGBTQ population. I don't think that's really going to repair things with the LGBTQ community. And I think it's probably just going to further annoy the Bud Light drinkers that feel completely deserted by this company. So this is really a no-win, total no-win. I mean, think about that marketing executive. There were two of them because she had a boss. It was Alyssa Heinerschneid and her boss, that Daniel Blake. And they have since been put on leave. And it's questionable as to whether that leave was voluntary or whether that leave was mandatory. I mean, hey, when you lose your company $26 billion, I imagine some of it might be, you know, the company saying enough is enough. And I would imagine that would be the kind of move that a company like that would or should make. But part of the question here becomes, can that CEO really lead the company going forward? And that is indeed a very, very big question. One that actually the HSBC analyst admitted to when he put a hold on the company's stock price, because it's not clear that management is really going to be able to see its way through this. It's not clear that Brian Cornell, the CEO of Target, is going to be able to manage this one. He sent out a letter to employees and saying, you know, what a difficult time this is and how much they want to support the LGBTQ community, but they don't want to alienate their customers. This is a tough thing to negotiate for corporate America. And I think the real answer here is, one, do your due diligence, right? Don't go out and hire the satanic designer. I mean, I hate to state the obvious. Do your due diligence, Bud Light, and don't go on a podcast saying, you know, we basically can't stand our customer base and our job, or my job, as she referred to herself, was to totally remake the brand because the brand was too stale and too fratty, et cetera. And so to go and pull the move that she did, or pull the move that the Target did with the satanic designer, I mean, it's a little bit different because they didn't totally know what they were getting into. Somebody didn't do their research enough. The fact that these companies find themselves in these positions, really, it tells you a lot. It tells you a lot as like a shareholder. It tells you a lot as an American. It tells you a lot as a voter. What it certainly should remind everyone of is that everyday Americans have a voice. And we use that voice however we can. Even if it's getting shut off on certain platforms, we still have the ability, thank you very much, to spend our money where we choose and to buy products that are aligned with our values. And so when Bud Light does something like that, you guys say, you know what, I'm not going to be caught dead drinking a Bud Light. Well, that catches up with the company. And so now Bud, which was, you know, Budweiser was the king of beer, it's not going to be anymore. In fact, that position might really, really be lost. Modelo is the new one. Let me see. Let me check my notes here, because they have been just skyrocketing in sales in comparison. Now, the other day we were talking about a report that came out from it was either Nielsen or Bump Consulting that suggested we were actually seeing a decline in beer products overall for Anheuser-Busch. And while that's true, something that was a little bit misleading in there was they were referring to Modelo as an Anheuser-Busch company, but that's actually not the case. I believe it is internationally. It gets kind of confusing, right? Because there's so many brands out there. I mean, like hundreds and hundreds of beer brands, and these conglomerates, which Anheuser-Busch is, a multinational conglomerate, may have the distribution and brand in one country, but not in another. So they don't have Modelo here that I believe is Constellation. So Modelo's actually been doing really well. You're looking at like sales up 20% versus Bud Light sales, which are down 26%. So it's really, it's just amazing. It's amazing how quickly all of this can just change and how quickly people react. And I think in some ways, though, it's incredibly encouraging to all of us who feel like sometimes, you know what, this world is getting a little bit crazy and we don't have any say in it. Well, it turns out we do. So remember that. Remember that. We started off the conversation talking a little bit about Joe Biden and his escalating age. It is really rather concerning, because, you know, I don't know how much this will get out, even this. Like, I don't know if algorithms will choose to sort of shun this. I remember when he fell off his bike. That was not to be shared. That was not to be seen. And so, again, I just want to emphasize it. We don't like showing this, right? We don't like seeing this. In fact, there are those moments when we've seen the president tripping on the stairs, going up Air Force One. It's hard to watch. And some people will play it on a loop and laugh. And I'm not one of those people. I'm really not. I think, though, that in this case, it's relevant only because he is up there. He's 80. And there's just the reality of being older. And as the president of the United States, you just need to be ready, able, willing. Now, one of the things that we saw John Kirby, I believe, over at the Pentagon recently come out with was a statement. I don't have this on tape for you, but we'll bring it soon, maybe tomorrow. But he actually said that without a doubt, the Russians are not wanting Biden to win, and so that you can expect some more interference. So I took that today to really be just yet another example of how they want to, they meaning the left, those in government currently, want to really and truly try to, I don't know, maybe pull another one of those 51 spy moves. I mean, are we supposed to think that everything that is against Biden is somehow misinformation? Are tech companies going to be told, hey, you can't allow that video to play of the president falling at the commencement address because Russia's going to exploit that? There was another study that came out this week saying that artificial intelligence will actually destroy humanity. Now, I mean, maybe it will. Heck, you know, maybe it will. But then the way they characterized that, the way they then framed it, they suggested that misinformation could be really rampant. And so as we try to clamp down on misinformation, I find myself just kind of cringing and immediately, you know, having sort of a flinch reaction to that, because who's to say what the misinformation is? Let's not forget where we were going into the last election cycle with a group of liberals that were supporting Joe Biden that absolutely did not want under any circumstances for Donald Trump to win. And they somehow saw that as a full-on national security threat, et cetera, et cetera. And therefore came out with that letter, which was published in Politico with the likes of, well, it was orchestrated by Mike Morrell, who allegedly was told, he said he was told by Antony Blinken to go ahead and do that. Anthony Blinken was like, oh, you know, I'm not political. I'm in the State Department. I'm Secretary of State now. Woo-hoo. Well, he was actually an advisor on Biden's campaign. So, you know, it's a little bit political, don't you think? He got Mike Morrell to write this thing, and they got all their friends to sign off on this. And consequently, everybody was told the Hunter Biden laptop thing, not real, just misinformation. And yet, when it was all said and done, it turned out the FBI was investigating that laptop, that the laptop was real. And the actual misinformation was that infamous dossier, which sent us down a rabbit hole, which I don't know as we'll ever fully recover from. So this is the world in which we live. And so when they say the AI is going to destroy humanity and that we have to be just uber, uber cautious, well, there are lots of issues here. Let me, maybe I can pull this for you. Let's see, because one of the other things that Biden said when he was at the commencement address today, this would have been before he actually fell, right? Before he actually went down again. Poor guy. I feel quite bad for him, but it's the reality of his age again. So I'm just seeing if we can pull this up because this was interesting. He was actually making the point as well. He was making the point on how AI is really going to hurt us going forward. And if we're not careful, then we will have mega problems on that front. And so this gels, of course, with what we saw, does it not, from the report by this committee. They published it saying, like, look, this is kind of the biggest threat to humanity. Again, I don't disagree with that. I'm actually very concerned about AI myself, and I've told you that repeatedly. However, it doesn't mean that we need to then kind of have the opposite effect and over-regulate speech in this attempt to make sure that we squash the stuff that might be misinformation. I mean, the things that they were labeling misinformation, like, I mean, you couldn't even say we were in recession after two quarters of negative growth. I mean, that's just bizarre to me. Okay, I think I've got this for you because I think it's relevant to play. Bear with me. You know, this is how you really know we're live, guys. This is how you know. This is how you know. Anyway, I would like to play it because I do think it's relevant. Let's see if we can pull it up here. Let me see. If we can't do it, then I promise I will bring it for you tomorrow. You know, I need a drum roll or something. You know, no pressure or anything. What happens then if it doesn't come up? Anyway, he's just something else here. Let me, again, I'm struggling a little bit, so maybe we do it tomorrow, but I'll read it to you. How about we do that? I met in the Oval Office, my office, with 8 leading scientists in the area of AI. Some are very worried that AI can actually overtake human thinking. And then you couple that, right? He's kind of just planting that seed. And it's a real thing to worry about. As I said, I'm not ignoring that. I'm actually quite nervous about where it could all head myself. But then you couple that with what we heard from John Kirby today. And I'm just going to read this as well. We won't try playing this because we clearly are a little tech challenged on that front. We're going to have the producers do it ahead of time, I guess. Anyway, let me see here if we can find John Kirby, because he was making the statement that we are at risk of the Russians interfering again. It's like, come on, can you come up with something new? Russia, Russia, Russia. How long have we been hearing that? I mean, if Russia is that big a deal, why did Barack Obama just, you know, throw it away like it was nothing? Remember that? Hey, Mitt Romney, take your 1980s policy back. If Russia was that big a deal, I mean, look, I do think in many ways Russia is a big deal and it is a security threat, et cetera, et cetera. But you also have to know how to manage that security threat, do you not? And I'm not convinced that this team knows how. I'm also not convinced that they necessarily see it as quite the threat that they should see it as. Instead, they see it as an excuse. It is an excuse to, again, point the finger at Russia and say, you know what, they're the ones trying to mess it up. Okay, here we go. Direct quote, it should come as no surprise to anybody that Putin would try to make it harder for Biden to win. I mean, this is where they're going already, to win election and to try to interfere in his ability to govern as president of the United States. Okay, so there we go. And so what does that mean? What does that mean for information flow? I mean, look, it's good that we have Elon Musk maybe over at Twitter, although people are starting to get a little worried about Elon right now because Elon just did a big shindig with the Chinese. And now he's like, you know, best friends with the head honcho over there. Like, that's causing a lot of people to be more and more concerned. Vivek Ramaswamy was one of them saying, look, I know this is not popular in conservative communities, but I just got to say, like, wait a second, what are we doing? I mean, the challenge with all of this, do not forget, is that CEOs, they have their own incentives for doing things. Oftentimes, it's because they want business in a particular area. Look, I mean, he's also selling Tesla. Like, he's got a market over there in China, and Tesla's actually done pretty well. And so you can't assume that people's motives are entirely pure. You can't assume that the government's motives are entirely pure or that any CEO's motives are entirely pure. And I think that's just the reality of where we are now. So it's disappointing and it's concerning. And I know that you guys have a lot of thoughts on it. I just want to look at some of your reactions here. Good to see all of you here. I mean, you're commenting, of course, on Elon Musk and, of course, have some thoughts on that. Mark Lester asking if Biden will become AI. Oh, you know, that could help him, couldn't it? If he could just have somebody program what to say, how to help him walk. Look, you know, it's really, really, really something. How is it that we have an 80-year-old in office? I mean, think about that. And not a young 80-year-old, an 80-year-old, by the way, who couldn't even get out on the campaign trail and wound up just sort of doing these remotes from his basement with a teleprompter. I mean, really, like, we need better candidates. We just need more candidates and better candidates. So, of course, Ron DeSantis, he's now the guy to hate on. And we saw him get into a little bit of a situation there up in New Hampshire. I don't know if you caught this. The AP reporter was like, why aren't you taking people's questions? He got really mad at him. He's like, do you have eyes? Like, can you not see what I'm doing? I guess his frustration being similar to some of the frustration that Trump often felt with the media. And rightly so. Look, the media has its bias, an extreme bias. And you need to understand that as a candidate going in. I think what makes it more challenging now is that not only do you have media bias, you get tech bias, you've got a lot of institutional bias working against conservative candidates. And yet America is still probably dominantly conservative on some of these issues. Granted, you know, maybe, you know, well, half the country, of course, is liberal, but when you really push people on, well, should parents have a say in their children's education? Should parents have a say in this whole gender dysphoria thing? 9 times out of 10, I think you're going to find that people really feel very strongly about these issues and identify more with conservatives than with liberals on these issues. So how do you get elected in this environment? I mean, I think it's going to be hard for conservatives for sure. They want to shut down Trump, but they're going to shut down anyone. That's what you have to remember. I mean, look what they did to Mitt Romney. They attacked him from you know, this way and that over and over and over again. And he didn't know how to really counter that. And he paid the price in the election and, you know, then suffered other fates as well. I know that he's not exactly a popular figure right now. But my point is, they're going to do this to anyone that is representing the Republican Party. I mean, they're going to say every hateful thing they can about the party. They are trying to cast Ron DeSantis as a racist, sexist, gender-phobic nut job. And look, the guy who's got a pretty strong educational background, by the way, the jury's still out for me, you know that, and it will be up until the 11th hour. as I look at sort of the candidates out there, and I'll try and be as honest and forthcoming as I can with you about all of their policies and what works, what doesn't work, at least from my perspective, and you may feel differently. I was always and remain a fan of Donald Trump's policies. I mean, some of the best policies on taxes, the economy, on the border, on international relations that I've really seen. And so I'd like to hear more from Ron DeSantis on the policy front. So anyway, he's up there in New Hampshire, gets in this little snuffle there with the AP reporter. And if you have watched The View lately, which I hope you don't, and I try not to, but occasionally I catch some clips here and there, they're attacking him. They don't even want to say his name. And he's that bad MAGA guy from that state that we don't even want to talk about. You get the NAACP coming out saying that they're issuing a travel warning as though they're the State Department. Don't go to Florida. Because Ron DeSantis is down there. I mean, it shows you how worried the left is about his potential candidacy. I think any of the polls will show you that Ron DeSantis or Donald Trump, they would beat Biden like today, right? I mean, that would be the scenario that is most likely. It might be harder for Trump, again, given his history there with the media and with tech, but it's going to be hard for Ron DeSantis, too, in that he's going to face the same kinds of obstacles. I think that that's just going to exist no matter what. And so as conservatives, we just kind of have to recognize that, right? Anyway, again, I want to go back to some of your comments here before we talk about another sort of dark horse candidate lurking out there in the wings, which would be Jamie Dimon. I know you guys want to talk about the debt crisis. Of course, I see from Mike O'Donnell. Yeah, I love talking about the debt crisis. I'm glad that I don't have to talk about it anymore, at least for a little while. But actually, it should be something that is front and center for us sort of at all times, because it's not sustainable at this level. It's actually really wacky that we have $32 trillion in debt. I was talking with a friend who's a very strong fiscal conservative recently, and he made the point that it's going to be 50 before you know it. And it will be. And there's no real clear answer there as to how we ever get out of this. I think that Kevin McCarthy was handed a pretty difficult hand, let's be honest, right? I mean, you have a president who's like, I'm not going to negotiate. No way. I just want a clean debt ceiling. He didn't want to negotiate or entertain any of these things until the 11th hour. Unfortunately, the public tends to glaze over. Eh? They hear debt. They hear debt ceiling. They hear, you know, government shutdown, default, you name it. And it's like, oh my gosh. And they tend to tune it out. And so politicians get away with a lot as a result of that. And I think we need to make sure that we're not tuning it out, that we actually do need to focus on this, because this is stuff that actually matters really and truly to the health of our economy long term. And they got to find a better way to deal with this. It's not going to be the math genius that, you know, keeps falling that's going to figure out how to solve all this. But I do think Kevin McCarthy, under the circumstances, was in a difficult place, but did the best he could. I mean, I can't believe, now I sound like establishment. I will tell you, the last thing in the world that I wanted for us was for us to ever be in a position of possibly defaulting, even just the whiff of it. I hate it, right? Because to me, America pays its bills. It's always paid its bills, and I don't appreciate the default talk. I don't appreciate it as an American or as a U.S. Treasury bondholder, right? You want to make sure that if you lend the government money, you're going to get that money back with interest and that there's nothing in jeopardy. And I know, yeah, they could have been clever about it. They could have extended it and gotten 4 more days, right, to Janet Yellen said, maybe not to the 5th. And they could have done this, that, and the other, and it might not have been a full-blown default. But what are we doing? Like, even talking about that, that is Latin America-esque. Some of you know this. I started my career at Goldman Sachs as an analyst in the sovereign debt emerging markets department on the trading desk there, where we were trading a lot of emerging markets, but I was primarily focused on Brazil, Mexico, Argentina, and Venezuela. Argentine debt crisis, anyone? I mean, how many times have they had to restructure their debt? Remember the Brady bonds? Look, we don't want to be any of those banana republics. We kind of like are in some ways, but if we start defaulting on things, it's a whole other ballgame. So if Republicans are smart right now, this is a time when you start saying, okay, where's my Tea Party? Where are my Tea Party enthusiasts? And how do we start bringing some accountability back into Washington when it comes to these massive, massive budgets? It's absolutely crazy to see. Hey, Luke, good to see you here. Rocco, good to see you. Annalisa, I hope I said your name right. Good to see you as well. Again, this is a live edition of today's program. The president, unfortunately, just falling there moments ago at his commencement address for the Air Force Academy. So we saw that. We've been talking about that. We're all clearly disappointed by that. But it does signal a warning, shall we say, to all of us as we head into 2024 and reminds us of the importance of getting new blood in politics. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, thank you for being here. Make sure, if you're not, if you're listening on YouTube, if you could go over to Apple Podcasts at some point and follow the show, it would be great to have you there. I'd love if you could rate it as well, and feel free to give a review, because that helps the algorithms. We got to counter whatever else is out there. So I appreciate that. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please come over to YouTube and join our live shows and our little community here where we talk almost every day. Right, guys? Again, great to see so many of you and so many regulars and new people as well. Leslie, of course, my friend from over on Locals, where I am, trishregan.locals.com. Leslie, it's wonderful to see you too. She has a funny comment. She said, I would have to have therapy if I watched The View. I'm with you. You know, I was surprised when my friend Meghan McCain went over there, who I knew from Fox, because I just thought that is going to be the worst job in the world. And I think she probably realized it was the worst job in the world. Can you imagine being the conservative? And she wasn't even, I mean, she was not a Trump supporter, clearly, but she tried to stand up for conservative values and was just attacked on a daily basis. And it was bitter and it was personal. You could see it all live on air. I can't even imagine. I think it would just be absolutely the worst job in the entire world. So Leslie, yes, I would need therapy too if I were ever to watch The View. I had a talent agent years ago say, hey, you know, they need somebody, they need a conservative. Are you interested? And I'm like, no, thank you. Like, you know, I mean, anyway, it's more power to the conservatives that are willing to go on there. But that is one tough show to take and a tough group of women, right, to listen to. Anyway, again, I'm just looking through some of your comments and thrilled to have so many of you here today. I unfortunate what we just saw, of course, but we are very glad that the White House has told us Joe Biden is doing fine. Whew, you know, because you know, at that age, you might not be. You really might not be. It's kind of hit or miss. And, you know, having fallen myself, and I'm almost half his age, well, not quite, I'm a little, you know, above 40, but anyway, who's counting? I wound up with a fractured elbow. I mean, this is what happens, right? Like, you know, nobody's, we're all human. And he's older, so that's tough to see. Everybody commenting there again on the debt ceiling. Look, it's really messed up, and nobody seems to care about this stuff until the 11th hour. I'm relieved that they got it done, and I'll say that, you know, I'm not one of these people to just dig in my heels and throw a temper tantrum and say, okay, like it's not right. Like, I get it, right? It's not. But simultaneously, I'm also a realist. And the last thing we want is for a default on our debt. Thank you very much. I would say this, though. This is a reminder to every single one of us that we need to actually put this front and center on every single person's agenda that's running for political office. We need to push them. We need to ask these questions. Half of them don't even know the difference between debt and deficits. They are not financially literate. And so it goes back to why I love seeing business people there running for office. Business people that actually understand the implications of all of this economic policy. I mean, this stuff matters. It does. Speaking of which, have you heard about Jamie Dimon possibly running for president? I don't think he's that crazy, really. I have a lot of respect for Jamie Dimon. I know a lot of people get annoyed about JP Morgan and it's becoming like the big bank and all that jazz. And I would just say I've met him in the past. I've interviewed him. I've always found him to be pretty direct, a straight shooter. Sometimes he says perhaps a little too much. Remember the time he got in trouble with China because he was at an event in Boston and he was celebrating the anniversary of JP Morgan. And he said something about, you know, and we're going to be here for the next 100 years. And I can't say the same thing about the CCP. And the CCP went nuts. And then he had to do kind of like this apology, which none of us liked. But the reality is he has all this business over there in China, which is another question. Like, why do we have all this business in China? Do we really want all this business in China? I mean, is there not a way? We built China. Thank you very much. That was Nixon. Remember Nixon in China? The thinking at the time was that the Soviets were the biggest threat. And so we needed to partner up with China so as to prevent that Soviet-China alliance. And so we did so. And then at some point, people are like, wow, okay, this is a really like hardworking group of people. And wow, we can get really, really cheap labor. And so all of a sudden, corporations started outsourcing more and more and more over there. And the Chinese were smart and they were hardworking and they looked at our technology and they said, okay, maybe we can do that too. And they effectively stole it. I mean, they have laws in place that require you to give them a lot of that tech know-how if you're going to operate over there. And that's exactly what American corporations did, because there was no discipline back here at home where anybody was saying, hey, you know, maybe we don't do that, because it was, ooh, free market, right? Open market, free market. We'll get the cheap labor. Who cares? You know, even if they take our technology and they are able to do things with it 10 years from now, everybody's worried about the stock price today, quarterly earnings today. They want to open up in that market. They want to get the cheap labor, et cetera. And so consequently, we're now in a situation where we're quite dependent on China in various ways, and in ways that really we shouldn't be, and I don't think is healthy long-term for us. And this AI battle is quite serious, because we need to be out in front of it. We need to win that one. The United States of America preserving American freedoms, which we hope they're able to do, because that's certainly questionable in various ways. But this is what actually is going to matter and dictate our future. So this relationship with China is a tough one. And there's lots of worry that, once again, it's like we're right back where we started. The Soviets and China teaming up. Now you've got Russia and China potentially teaming up. Is that a threat? I don't necessarily think so. I don't think that Russia has its act together, economically speaking, enough or politically speaking, to really be able to do much. But of course, it is a source of energy. It's a source of energy for China, a source of energy that they need and they want. And so that is a relationship that is certainly one to watch, as well as some of the relationships down south in our hemisphere, right? Venezuela, I've mentioned before, because the place is crawling with Russians. My sources tell me now Russians buying up so much of the secondary debt market there, not to wonk out on you, but basically all of the instruments that would give ownership to some of the oil fields down there, because Americans can't buy it. So these are international challenges that we face. And I would like to see somebody in the Oval Office that actually really and truly understands them. And it's not clear that we have those candidates. Well, I mean, you know what, in Trump's defense, and I've said this all along, again, I appreciated that he came from a business standpoint, because he was a realist on the economic front. I look around at, you know, I'd like to see more from Ron DeSantis. I don't know enough about him in terms of his economic policy to really have a firm footing on where he is. But I think right now he's still in a very vulnerable position where he's going to get trounced by Trump. So maybe none of it is really relevant. I do like, of course, what he did in Florida. Who doesn't? I was just down there recently, you know, doing my part, shall we say, after the NAACP said, don't go to Florida. Trish Regan went, ladies and gentlemen, and she had a fantastic time, an absolutely fantastic time. And one of the things that hit me was how well they managed to do. Like, everybody moved there. I was at a nice fancy restaurant that we used to have on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. Well, we still do, by the famous chef Daniel Boulud. And I was there, and it was just a transplant. It's like, well, they closed in New York, so they opened in Florida. Florida was only closed for 2 weeks. They kept that economy open, and that was thanks to the strength and the foresight of Ron DeSantis. So I give him that credit. Well, you know it's live. I got alarms going off and everything. Well, here's Jamie Dimon.
We haven't
here's
been
the guy.
Quantitative tightening. So we really don't know what's going to happen to deposits at all. And that's why I've been quite concerned about that. I'm probably more concerned about quantitative tightening than almost anybody in this room. We've never had QE before. We've never had QT before. It just started.
Okay. So he's got his worries about QE and QT, as do I. I think that the Fed just screwed up in royally epic ways by flooding our markets with so much money. Well, simultaneously, Joe Biden was giving out the third stimulus check while, of course, his Congress there, before Republicans came in, were signing checks, you know, with insane amounts of money going to things like the Inflation Reduction Act, which just resulted, of course, in more inflation, because that's what happens when you put that many dollars chasing that few goods. That is what happens. Anyway, now we're in a situation where they're trying to tighten, and that's worrying Jamie Dimon. It's worrying me. It's worrying everybody. And I don't know if they're going to be able to keep that up. I think that they're probably going to wind up easing as we go into 2024 because they don't want to be on the hook for a bad economy during an election cycle. But what if Jamie Dimon were to run? I mean, I don't, again, I'm humoring those that are talking about it. He was over in China, ironically, and a Bloomberg reporter asked him there about politics. And he said basically that he could see something like that in his future, that he would like to serve his country. You know, he is a patriot, and I think he's real on that front. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe Treasury Secretary, like that would make sense, right? Treasury Secretary, Jamie Dimon, I could see it in a second. But Bill Ackman, the famed investor, he immediately started tweeting about what a wonderful president Jamie Dimon would be. And so that got some traction. Some people laughing about that, saying, you know, does Bill owe Jamie something? Like, he must be looking for something from JP Morgan. It's interesting because it comes at a time when also you're seeing all these stories emerge about Jeffrey Epstein. The Wall Street Journal has done a lot of reporting on this, and they've found that Jeffrey Epstein's schedule that was actually sort of the one that was behind the books, not out in front, actually was more elaborate than anybody initially thought. And there were lots of other people involved, et cetera. And so now they've been tying it back in some way, shape, or form to Jamie Dimon, because Jess Stanley, who used to be at JP Morgan and then went over, I believe, to Barclays, well, Jess had some kind of friendship and business relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. And so there's chatter about whether or not Jamie Dimon may or may not have signed off on having Jeffrey Epstein continue on as a client, even despite all the sordid stuff that had happened. And what has been reported out there is that Jamie Dimon allegedly said, you know, yes, you could keep him as a client. And Jamie Dimon and JP Morgan are saying, no, that's not true. Anyway, I just find it peculiar timing. Like, the guy's talking about getting into politics, and all of a sudden they're dangling the Epstein stuff out there, right? Like, somebody doesn't want him running, which is kind of interesting. He has said in the past, this is very interesting, that he is a Democrat in his heart, but a Republican in his brain. So that's sort of like, I want to have my cake and eat it too, I guess. As long as I've known him, have considered him a pretty strong fiscal conservative that believes in everything that America can be. And he's pretty straightforward about that stuff. The problem nowadays is it's harder and harder to be that, right? It's hard to be that because everybody's gone woke. And that is perhaps one of the biggest threats, combined with this AI stuff, combined with sort of big power now entrenched in the White House, that we are going to continue to face as Americans. So again, great to have you guys all here. I think everybody's kind of all over the map right now in terms of where they're coming down, whether it's Trump, whether it's DeSantis, whether it's Jamie Dimon. I don't think Jamie Dimon, maybe the answer is, oh, this is interesting. I'm really thinking out loud on this live show because you guys, you know, as I look at these comments, you got me thinking, what if Jamie Dimon ran as a Democrat? I mean, think about it, right? He's a heck of a lot younger. He's certainly way more qualified. You know, he's got the woke thing sort of going on. That would be an interesting proposition. I mean, Joe Biden would never, ever, 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 ever go for it. But I'm just thinking, would Jamie Dimon be Republican or Democrat? And I think the Republican field is going to be impossible, absolutely impossible for anybody other than Donald Trump. I would be shocked. And I will remain sort of open about this until the bitter end, but we'll see how the polls start coming in. I think that Ron DeSantis, if I were his family, I would have advised him to wait. I would have said, okay, you know what? You can do this in 2028 and not have the same sort of risk factor. You get a little bit more experience under your belt and come forward in 28 and bring the whole crowd that was supporting Donald Trump with you. And instead, he decided to go head to head. I'm not really sure why, other than, you know, these politicians have huge egos. And I'm sure somebody was telling him, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it. I don't think he can. And I don't think Jamie Dimon could at all either. And so it's a question of, would Joe Biden be willing to get out of the race? And I don't think, despite what we saw, and you guys all saw it, I'm going to prevent myself from playing it again out of respect to the president. But if you haven't seen it, you can go back to the beginning of this show where we did play it. It's tough to watch. He is not in good shape, I think, from a sort of physical perspective or from a mental perspective. I mean, we all have our moments, right? We all have our moments and we all forget our train of thought here, there, and everywhere. But Joe Biden is a special case of that. Granted, he's kind of been that way for a long time. I've gone back and looked at tapes of when I was a kid and he was running for president because he was running for president his whole life. Imagine that. Ugh, imagine that. Anyway, Joe Biden is who he is, and he has gotten worse at who he is. He's never been that smart. He's never been that eloquent. He's never been that dynamic. He's never been really that strong on any of the policy fronts. He's got nothing going for him other than he's a politician. Apparently, he's a good enough politician to be where he is and to have lasted as long as he has lasted. But somebody's got to come along because we don't want four more years of that. Now, do we? Right? Anyway, so good to see you all here. Really, really good to see you all here. I encourage you, if you have not already subscribed to the channel, I'd love to have you join us. Subscribe. Don't forget to hit the bell because then you know when I'm live. We're going to get it down to a schedule. I promise. You know, just lots of moving parts right now. Anyway, great to see you all. We have on tomorrow's show the woman who runs tech policy at Heritage. She's going to join us on this whole AI thing because it's becoming an issue and we want to protect ourselves going into 24. I'll see you tomorrow.